I think the impetus was almost every day in the last couple years, sexual assault has been in the headlines. And we felt that Mesa needed to continue to have our voice out there in terms of our take on these issues and not let not to let the focus get lost or diluted, to oversimplify things. The Me Too movement has been great, but if you just, it's more than just Me Too. It's what's, why are there so many Me Toos? So we wanted a format, a forum to really kind of take a deeper dive.
So the first 5 week series is taking a look at this backlash that we've kind of seen in reaction to Me Too. That a narrative coming out that, well, now this is actually a scary time to be a man. So take us through that and how that backlash, if that's the right term, has kind of emerged as part of the Me Too movement.
Yes, exactly. It was our president of the United States, I think, that first uttered those words specifically to say, oh, we men have to look out now. And then I think it got some other popular support. That, oh boy, people need now to be careful at work, and men can't be themselves at work. And it was such a, it's so maddening, really, because the men who need to be worried about the behavior and the men who maybe might want to have some feelings of fear are the men that are committing and perpetrating crimes of sexual violence. If men aren't doing that, men have nothing to be worried about, right? But the culture is changing for the men who are doing that because they're being called out and starting to be held accountable. So it's a good thing, but it was used as a way to almost let's silence this because our poor sons, our brothers, our husbands now are feeling unsafe.
I know the first episode in the series, you're trying to get a pulse on what people locally are thinking, and you spoke to a variety of different Boulder County residents. I mean, what do people think about this?
Well, I think overall, the overwhelming majority were, no, it's not a scary time for men, and nothing compared to what it's been for women for all these years. But as you'll hear in the podcast, there are a few that do believe that this is a time men or women can accuse men of something and men can be held accountable without proof. And that's just not the case. But that's the fear.
I mean, if you look at the actual statistics on how many cases of sexual assault end up in court, I mean, it's the tip of the iceberg. You know, compared to the number of cases that are reported, let alone the ones that go unreported, and how many of them are actually false accusations. I mean, it really is minuscule, and it is so interesting how certain elements have been able to twist this narrative that this is an epidemic of false accusations.
That's right. And I think sometimes it's the collective denial of this can't possibly be true because I know this person and they're a good person, or they're an upstanding member of our community, or they're a great coworker. Well, that might in fact be true, but that doesn't mean that someone in that with that status, in that role, with that perception can also commit sexual violence.
Well, the entire series is looking at, is it a scary time for men? But really the actual podcast is Sex by Invitation Only, which really gets to this issue of consent. And that seems to be a grey area for some, where people need to have it explained in the most explicit terms what consent is and what it isn't. And an absence of a no is now acknowledged to not be consent. That consent is actually a positive, an affirmation.
That's right. It's an active process, right? An affirmation. So, but it's still frightening that in many of our high schools locally, that there can be confusion that if someone is asleep, that they... If someone then assaults them or quote unquote has sex with them while they're in sleep, that's not a sexual assault, when in fact it is, because consent is absent. So that person may not struggle, they may not say no outright, but they're not actively consenting to participate in a mutual sexual relationship at that time. So yeah, we wanted a deeper kind of dive into that, and realizing that when we start with getting consent in an affirmative, mutual, collaborative way, good things can stem from that. And when that's not obtained, it's a crime.
You know, it's part of this backlash to the Me Too movement that we've also seen emerge, and not just from men, but very often from women as well, is that this has now gotten us into an area where there's no room for flirting. There's no room for, you know, exciting relationships between men and women because everything has to be so explicitly stated. I mean, can you address that as well?
Well, I guess my take on that and Mace's take on that is that explicitly stated consent is sexy. That is exciting. That is part of developing healthy, close, intimate sex and fun sex in a way that's safe for both parties. So I think it's how you frame that and better to be sure and better to be clear than to suffer the consequences, both people to suffer the consequences if it's not.
Do you think the Me Too movement has focused too much on, say, a heteronormative reality? I mean, do we need to really talk about other gender identities, other sexual orientations, and how they're being impacted in a very specific way by this issue of sexual assault?
Absolutely, because what happens when voices come forward, we want to make sure it's all voices. And traditionally, the people who are in the margins with different sexual identities or people of color, their voice isn't heard and loud. And it's so ironic, as Me Too was founded by a woman of color, right? But still, women of color's voices and experience get left to the side. So we want to make sure that's brought right to the center, at least as a focus of our podcast.
So in terms of the work that you're doing with Mesa, and you're with the head really overseeing trauma services at Mental Health Partners, what's the reality, you know, not necessarily statistics, but, you know, what's going on with sexual assault, say, even in this community?
It happens at just unfathomable levels, quite frankly. It just feels like it's surprising when we encounter someone coming in for counseling or advocacy that hasn't had this happen before, which is frightening. And just because Boulder County is a progressive and, you know, airs maybe a little liberal politically doesn't mean that it's immune from sexual violence. So it is still epidemic even here, even in Boulder.
How do we change then the conversation? Because I know there are workshops being done in high schools and it sounds like it needs to start earlier. I mean, that we need to start talking about consent at an age appropriate level, but like right from the get-go, when kids have consciousness and have an ability to grasp different concepts.
Right from the get-go. I mean, even something as simple as when your two-year-old son or daughter goes to visit another relative and they say, oh, go give grandma a kiss or go hug grandpa. Maybe it's shifting the paradigm to say, would you like to go and hug grandpa here? And giving a child agency, giving the child control over their body, starting that young to be able to set limits and boundaries and choose when they want contact and when they don't. That's a powerful message that sometimes we don't learn ever. So we start young.
And in terms of that messaging, I know a lot of discussion happens in families with girls. And I know this anecdotally from various different people I've spoken to. And, you know, from my own personal experience, there's a lot of discussion about how to protect yourself as a young woman going out into the world. If you're going off to college, even if you're in high school, if you're going into these social settings, how to protect yourself. Don't leave your drink unattended. Always be with a friend. That always seems to me to be putting the onus on possible victims of sexual assault, that it's up to you to prevent all of this. Instead, can we not have, or are we having conversations about stopping that behaviour in the first place by the people who are likely to be the perpetrators?
Yes, exactly. We call what you're describing risk reduction behaviour. And some of that is helpful, but it's about how to avoid being raped. It's not about stopping rape from occurring in the first place. And I guess the positive thing is I'm starting to see a little change with that. Recently, there was a string of series where women were being drugged and sexually assaulted on the Hill. And in the past, I would get calls from reporters of all media outlets and say, what can women do to keep themselves safe because this is happening? And you know, finally, I think they got tired of me saying I'm not answering that question anymore. And they started asking me a different question, which is, what is going on with men that think that this is an okay thing to do? Like, what is that about? And so that shows me we're starting to see some cultural change.
And are we seeing that reflected, say, in law enforcement, where very often if victims, and this is a very small number of sexual assaults, even work their way through the system to a trial, victims in the past have been subject to the most awful line of questioning around their own, their appearance, what they were wearing, their own sexual past. I mean, are we seeing that change in the courtrooms? Albeit that that's a very small number in terms of the overall scope of sexual assault.
Yeah, I think it's starting to grow. It's as a general rule, we're lucky in this county that I think we have what we call victim-centered or victim-focused interviews, and where law enforcement starts by believing the victim and then believes the victim until they have reason not to, right? And not going into blaming mentalities, but more looking at the nature of the crime versus what the victim did or didn't do.
So what could we be doing as a community, either in families, if you have children, or really doesn't matter what age you have folks in your families, it's never too late or too early to start the conversation. So what can we be doing at a family level and then at a broader community level around this issue?
Well, I think both. We have to start by educating ourselves and make sure we have the right facts. We have the right information to know that sexual assault is a problem. And the only way to truly prevent it is to have people not perpetrate the crime. So it begins by respecting people. And specifically, since most of the cases is men perpetrating violence against women, it's men respecting women's bodies. And those conversations, so we have to educate, and then we have to have difficult conversations, not just with daughters, but with sons. And we're hoping that the podcast can be a way to bring that education and just put it into everyday terms that people, parents, community members can use and draw from.
Are you hopeful now in the light of the Me Too movement that at least we are actually having conversations around this, a topic that traditionally has not necessarily gotten aired, certainly not at the level it is right now?
I am hopeful, Maeve. And this is what makes me hopeful, too. I've been the director over Mesa for 20 years. And in the past, what I have seen is when there is a huge sex assault in the news or other big social movements, what I've seen in the past is victims go back underground. They don't want to come forward. They see what happens. They see how the victim is treated. They see society's comments. And they go, what I call, go underground. And they don't want to come forward. Now, what makes me feel hopeful is now we have high-profile sex assault cases. I mean, we had at Mesa on the day of the Kavanaugh hearing, we had 18 calls to our hotline in one day. We average about 3 a day. So that to me says when now what's happened is people see it, hear it, and they come forward versus going underground.
And is some of that uptick people reflecting on experiences that they've had in the past, as opposed to this just happened to me?
Exactly. It's like, wow, that story sounded familiar to something that happened to me in high school. And putting the pieces together and then starting to say, wow, okay, maybe this is why I've been affected in certain ways all this time. And now feel ready to do something about it.
Given the statistics that such a small number of sexual assaults end up in court, then getting into the even smaller statistics of people who are actually prosecuted for sexual assault, how do people recover from this? I mean, given that the legal pathway for victims isn't entirely clear, it's not always positive, and it's certainly not always successful. I mean, what are the ways that people can find the way out of this to recovery?
So two things come to mind. So while you're exactly right from a criminal perspective, what we have found is more victims are pursuing a civil route in terms of civil litigation against perpetrators or entities that didn't protect. So that gives another avenue. We're finding that a lot of victims are coming and finding some sort of advocacy or activism as part of their healing. So getting involved by starting a group for sexual assault survivors at their school or doing other things to kind of begin their healing path or to incorporate into their healing path. So I think victims are getting very creative to find alternative ways to heal.
If people are listening now and this is triggering them or ringing a bell or making them feel that they want to reach out? I mean, what are the various different services that are on offer in Boulder County specifically?
So a very easy place to start is the 24-hour MESA hotline, which is 303-443-7300. And also can check out the website at movingtoendsexualassault.org, which has a variety of resources to connect people to the right place.
Now, we talked about education that's happening in high schools. What about on campus? Because there's been so much coverage about sexual assault on campus. And then you mentioned those recent cases of people being drugged on the hill. Of course, that's in close proximity to CU Boulder. Is enough being done by colleges, by universities around all of this, either prosecuting, holding perpetrators to account, or just changing the culture?
Yeah. So at CU, they have really, I think, come a long way with their Title IX investigative process on campus to really get at the heart of the investigations of these cases. That's going well. In terms of their prevention education, it's hard for me to comment on that because they handle all of that kind of internally. That is an internally controlled department. So I can't speak with good certainty about their strategies and program there.
Well, what would you like to see happen widespread on college campuses, in high schools, so that we can get to the heart of this, which is essentially a culture around, it's called rape culture, but really it's this culture that women's bodies are objectified. And this is getting back to the fact that so often we talk about this in a heteronormative way. Of course, non-binary people, people who are on all sides of the gender spectrum, and particularly people of colour, are most often victimised often in these ways and don't have the spaces to talk about it. And yet, what can we do then? What would you like to see happen?
Well, I think the conversations need to be woven into every part of the college curriculum, not something that you take for 1 hour in your freshman orientation week, right? This is sexual assault, essentially. Don't do it and report it if it happens. We need the conversations woven into marketing classes and, you know, everywhere, all around them, in terms of talking about healthy relationships and how do you know you got consent and all those pieces about the intersections that you're talking about, why people of color or poor people or people with mental illness are at more risk to be violated sexually. So that conversation can't be had very intelligently in an hour. It needs to be woven into all part of the college experience.
Well, this podcast is available at movingtoendsexualassault.org/media. We'll put a link to that at kgnu.org, but you can also just do a search in your podcast app. It's called Sex by Invitation Only. It is produced by MESA, Moving to End Sexual Assault, which is a program of Mental Health Partners here in Boulder County. Janine, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Maeve.